Hi, I'm Marilyn Smith. This is All Sides Weekend today. We're once again entering the world of books with WOSU book reviewer Cassie Rose, Columbus book reviewer Bill Eichenberger, and poet and professor of English at Capital University, Kevin Griffith. I haven't read any books lately. I've been gardening, you know, when the weather gets nice, and I'm ashamed to admit this. When Christopher asked me to fill in, I thought, ooh. I don't know if anybody wants to hear about the garden on our book day. But, you know, you do become preoccupied often with other things as the yard opens up, and whether it's, you know, planting grass or working with flowers. So I'm going to look to the three of you to give us a start here in terms of recommendations for summer reading. The last good book I read was Little Bee by Christopher Reeve. Or Cleave, rather, and I know it's not brand new, but it really, I thought, was a riveting, riveting book.
I'm not familiar with it.
Really?
No, I'm not. What? Who?
I've stumped the panel already.
Yeah, tell us
yes.
about it.
This is it was a very, very interesting book that really hinged upon occurrences in an instant, you know, that sort of serendipitous moment that you don't expect and what you do as a response. And in this case, it affected these people's lives. A young Nigerian girl and an English couple on a beach. And it just had results that ricocheted throughout their lives. But this little Nigerian girl comes over to England, and it's very funny in a way. She's in a detention camp, but she's learning English, and she's speaking the Queen's English. And she finally goes to meet this couple. They're the only people that she knows in England, with just devastating results.
How did the book come to you? Did you, or how did you choose it?
You know, I saw it in Target, and it just had this wonderful.
It was an impulse buy.
It was. And it had this wonderful graphic on the cover. And I thought, you know, I've heard of this, but I really don't know anything about it. And I just needed a book. And because it was a couple months ago, and I read it. And I've since given it to my daughter, and we don't always, even though she was an English lit major and I was an English lit major 100 years ago, we don't always see eye to eye about literature, but she loved this book.
See, and I think that's the challenge for the publishers, is because here's a moment where you want a good book, and where do you make your choice of selecting it? Do you read the book reviews? Do you go browsing in Barnes & Noble? Do you get online? It's this big, I think, a question mark that's the constant challenge for the publishers, because there are so many books out there, and, you know, in my eyes, I'm thinking of, oh, my gosh, you could go here, here, and here, and in this one moment, you know, you're in Target, and you just say, oh. And you happened to pick this up.
Yeah, the price was right. Mm-hmm. But we did have a caller several months ago when I was still hosting the show, somebody telling us about the library where you could register the last book you read. And rather like Amazon, they would then recommend another book based on what you had just read. So there is at least that right here in our public library, the number one public library in the country.
Well, and that's what independent booksellers used to do before we got the mega sellers and the online or whatever. You had a relationship with your independent bookseller, and they knew what your choices were, and they recommended them.
I think the owner of Amazon.com had offered $1 million for an engineer, program writer, or whatever, to come up with a more accurate or more useful, if you bought this, you'll like this. A system of searching, and I didn't hear the end of that, and whether or not anyone ever claimed $1 million. But they do have that kind of thing. I'm a little suspicious of those.
I am too, and I don't know why, but it just because it lacks that human quality of and the nuances of when you would walk into a store and someone can say to you, "Well, if you like this book, then you're going to, you know, like this author, and this is why," and you can have a little discussion about it.
Because it's not, and I think that's what well, it's so long ago, it probably is even worth mentioning, but at the old independent bookstore where the person behind the counter knew who you were, they weren't saying, if you like this book. They knew what you'd read in the last year or a couple of years, and they could say, if you read these 15 books, you're likely to like. I mean, if you could just pick one selection. And I'm sure, I suppose, if Amazon did it where they took into consideration all the books that you'd read to find out what.
Well, the other thing, though, about Amazon, because this happened to a friend of mine. There were several of us. It was a birthday thing or something. We, as a joke or whatever, we were just, you know, either we sent something on Amazon to someone as a recommendation, and she wrote back and she said, okay, now all of the related you might like are going to be, you know, these books that, you know, whatever. And it was some either a bloody thriller or it was something, you know, that she so didn't like or whatever. And I thought, yeah, so the association they're making was not her choices at all.
292-8513, we're talking about books with Cassie Rose, Bill Eichenberger, and Kevin Griffith. And Kevin, jump right in. Where do you get your recommendations? How do you decide?
Well, I was going to say the Columbus Public Library now has a similar a system to Amazon. If you request a certain book or reserve a certain book, it will give you a list of, you know, here are other books that fall into this category. And it's kind of helpful, although I've had mixed success with that kind of thing, I'm sure, as everybody else has. That's hard to do. I've had like one of my favorite writers is Jonathan Ames. I love his work, but then they'll give me a recommendation. If you liked Ames, you'll like this. And I get that. And it's like, what's going on here? How did they ever think that I might like this? I mean, okay, he was a man and his name, last name started with A and this person's a man. But one of the wonderful things about our libraries is I hadn't been there in a while, but I went to the Worthington Public Library. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. They have a new book section that is just phenomenal. If you go into their new book room, you know, it's an enormous room with new books and categorized and as mysteries, nonfiction, rock, graphic novels. It's incredible. And that's the best way I find of picking up new work. I'll just go through and spend an hour browsing, see what catches my eye.
Because Cassie, isn't that, I mean, what you're saying, that the publisher's challenge is getting the word out about new books, and new books don't have the track record to even be placed in these. If you like this, you'll like that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because it takes a certain number of hits and people with like-minded tastes and stuff to even build a, you know, sort of a resume, a CV for these books. And if it's a brand new book, how do you get turned on to
exactly
that?
And especially if it's a first novelist,
yeah,
too.
Right.
Well, of course, librarians, as always, are very helpful and more than willing to share their knowledge about books. And I have found in going to the library that depending on the area where I go, that these people are extremely knowledgeable about their particular areas and very helpful. NPR also publishes a list of books. They really do keep very much up to date on music and on books. And they do a lot on the air even with books, with Nancy Pearl, for example, Lynn Neary. For a while there, I think that was pretty much all she was doing was reports on books and authors. They do have a list on their website now of people at NPR and their recommendations for the summer, as well as the New York Times, of course, and other lists that are available.
You know, Modern Library did the top 100 novels of the 20th century, and I wonder how many hits they get still to this day on that on that on their website there. And now they've put up the Reader's Top 100, which, of course, demonstrates why Reader's Top 100s are – they can be less than useful. Seven of the first 11 books are Ayn Rand.
Yeah,
so it's like, okay, great. Pick
so
one.
Somebody,
and
I know, that's right. Yeah.
Somebody step back.
A little too much Ayn Rand there.
292-8513. One of my colleagues recently told me she was rereading the classics, and I thought maybe she was reading Beowulf and the Iliad. Well, no, I mean, it was much more modern than that. But whole movies and films have been devoted to people reading you know, some of the English classic books, popular things, fiction, of course, mostly. But, you know, it's fun to go back and read some of the things that you still hear about but never read.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that, too. I think that because there are such wonderful books already on the bookshelf and back in the stacks, and, of course, when you walk into Barnes & Noble, you get all the towers there of the new books that they're pushing towards you. And not that there's anything wrong with it, but it really prevents you from getting back into the stacks. Or looking back into like all the books that won the Pulitzer Prize, you can get on that website and read those books, or that won the National Book Awards. Mm-hmm. And when I get onto those websites, I then make this list and commit to wanting to read all these books, and then I have the challenge of the new books also. Mm-hmm. But that's a great way to find really good, involving books, as opposed to all the new beach reads that they keep, you know, proposing.
292-8513, and Kay is joining us. Hi. Go ahead.
Hello. Listen, I wanted to thank you for taking the call. And I just want to recommend one, the book that you talked about reading and giving to your daughter. It's an excellent book. I'm halfway through it. But the comment I really had to make was about small bookstores. They still exist in most communities. You just have to find them. And I just, about several months ago, moved out of Granville, which is east of of Columbus, and they call themselves personal shoppers, and I'm still buying through that little bookstore because they're willing to send books. I have grandkids all over the world, and they're willing to pick out books for me that the kids love, and they always recommend to me the books that they think I'm going to like, and their batting average is about 300.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So yeah, they're still there. You just have to spend some time finding them.
Right.
Well, of course, in a community like Granville, it would probably be easier to find that little bookstore than it would be, say, in Columbus. You know, and I remember back when I first moved here, Little Professor and some of the great bookstores that were here that, of course, have been replaced by some of these big box stores. And, of course, the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can hardly compete now with price and, you know, getting it to you.
Well, that's the challenge. It's the price. So you have a hardcover book that's coming out at $26 or, I mean, just this morning I was looking at a book. It's called The Illustrated Book of Lists, I think, by Umberto Eco and by Rizzoli. So that tells me, okay, it's going to be expensive because it's going to be well illustrated.
Hello.
And, it's a $45 book if you buy it at Barnes & Noble, but if you buy it online, it's $32.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So that even makes up for postage. 292-8513. But, of course, what she was saying, too, how much is it worth to you to have somebody who recommends gifts for your grandchildren that are always a hit with them and books for you? Perhaps it's worth $9 or $10.
Right. It's the impulse buy for me. I'll get to buy. I want the book right away, so I'll spend the extra $15.
292-8513. Courtney is joining us. Hi, Courtney.
Oh, good morning. I'm so excited I get to participate because during the year I'm a teacher, and I always miss when you guys talk about books because I'm at school teaching about books.
Well, you know, you can always listen at night. The shows are repeated at night at between
8
7.
O'clock. Yeah.
I need to start doing that.
And you can stream them on the web.
Okay. Well, during the year, I recommend a very different kind of book. But since it's the summer and we're all talking about candy, the candy that I'm reading right now is an author named Robert Crais. I believe it's C-R-A-I-S. And he's been around for a while. He's got a whole series of, they're a little bit mystery, they're a little bit thriller, the action is nonstop. And what I really like about him is that it's not just good plot. He has really built and invested into these two characters, Joe Pike and Elvis Cole. One of them is a detective, and the other one is kind of his muscle guy. And it's just, they're wonderful. They're well-written. I was an English major, so I cannot read, you know, a lot of the New York Times bestsellers because it's just hack work, and I can't get through it. But this guy is really good. It's nonstop. There's literary references kind of sprinkled throughout. So he's who I'm reading in June and July.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for your call today. And we're going to talk about, Bill obviously is familiar with this author. We do have to take a minute or so time out here, and we'll be back.
Thank you.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News team.
What's the mood like there today?
What do you think? We're the first store in Ohio to sell a Powerball winning ticket.
Do you have any, by any chance, know who the winner is?
No, I don't. I just hope it's a good people and they do good things with it.
Hear the latest in local and national news with Morning Edition on WOSU 89.7 FM. You are listening to All Sides Weekend here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for tuning in this morning. It's 20 minutes past 11. I'm Emma Fett in for Amy Jurovich today. Sunny this afternoon with a high near 86. Currently it's 79 degrees and mostly sunny. Tonight mostly clear with a low around 64. The weekend's looking fairly decent. Sunny with a high near 91 tomorrow, but some scattered showers and thunderstorms possible on Sunday, as well as a high near 91. Now back to All Sides Weekend.
Hi, I'm Marilyn Smith, and we're talking about books today on All Sides Weekend with Bill Eichenberger and Cassie Rose, who reviews books here at WOSU, along with poet and professor of English Kevin Griffith, who teaches at Capital University. Right before the break, Courtney called with a recommendation to read author Robert Cray's there's some familiarity with him here on the panel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I recommend Robert Crace. He's good, and I have a lot of friends who have read all of his novels. I was just going to recommend for Courtney, we were talking about this, Cassie and I, during the break, the phenomenon of Stieg Larsson, the girl with the dragon tattoo and the girl played with fire, right?
It's the Millennium Trilogy.
Yeah, and I would recommend, since I'm an English major too and I appreciate good writing just like Courtney does, I would strongly recommend getting into some of the great detective fiction and crime fiction coming out of Scandinavia. I had a recommendation, if I can pronounce his name right, Arnaldur Indriðason. But the novel's name is Jar City. This is the first of his novels to come out in English, to be translated, Jar City. It's an Inspector Erlander mystery.
And this is J-A-R, Jar?
Jar City, yes.
They're
all set in Reykjavik, so you learn a lot about Iceland, Icelandic culture. Extremely well-written, simple, spare prose style, good character development. So I recommend Jar City. Remember that one. If you're looking for a good read, I also Bill and I were talking about Henning Mankell, and I think Henning Mankell's latest novel, The Man from Beijing, is an excellent read. I strongly recommend that. The Man from Beijing is I read that about a month ago after it first came out, and it's probably one of the more satisfying reads I've had.
Oh,
and
good.
It's one of the better novels he's written in the past few years.
Good, because he had some spotty. We had kind of almost lost interest.
Yes.
In,
yeah. He kind of went downhill. As soon as he lost the whole Kurt Wallander mystery series, mm-hmm. he went on sort of autonomous novels. He went mm-hmm. downhill. But he's from Scandinavia.
It was probably hard to find his way.
Yeah,
again.
A Swedish and an Icelandic writer. And Cassie had another recommendation.
Yes, The Ice Princess, which just came out this month. It is Camilla Läckberg's first novel, but she published it in 2003 in Sweden, and she's now the number one crime novelist in Scandinavia and perhaps
so
even
Europe. So this was 7 years ago.
Correct, but she's now being entered into the United States on, I think, the tailwinds of the Stieg Larsson book. So the publishers, American publishers, are hoping to bring some of the Swedish authors in and get American readers hooked on them. At this point, I mean, The Ice Princess is a very good book. It's a crime mystery. There's a murder. Good character development, the same things that Kevin has mentioned about his recommendations. What I like about it also is it's multi-layered in terms of the plot lines, so that it's not just the solving of the mystery, but there is a relationship between the detective and a woman who is best friends with the person who was murdered. It takes place in the town where the author grew up. It's called Fjällbacka or something like that. And she sets all of her novels, the author sets all of her novels in this town where she grew up. And there's also some dysfunctional family issues going on between the protagonist and her sister. So it's got a lot of entry points in terms of tension and intrigue. And you can tell by the time you get to the end of the book that the author carries through with these authors in her next books, which she has. I did some research on her. And there are about two or three other books after this that have circulated in Europe that it'll be interesting to see if they come to America.
And her name in the title of the book again?
The title of the book is The Ice Princess, and it's by Camilla Läckberg.
And is it dark, like a Swedish, traditional Swedish film? Is it moody?
It's not. It's. I've seen it advertised as both mystery and crime and psychological thriller, but it's not like a noirish crime novel. And that's where the critics are coming in and pointing out that there's a softness to it in terms of you've got the crime, but it's balanced by a lot of the relationship stories that are going on. So it's
softness is not a criticism in that case.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, it could be.
If your expectation is to come in here and get the dark noirish crime atmosphere, but that is not her talent. Her talent is more in the developing the crime with the characters and also in the setting of this coastal town in Sweden. So I think it's a combination that works very well.
Especially for summer.
Yes, it does.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
292-8513. Gary is joining us with his recommendation. Hi, Gary. Maybe not. There you go. Gary?
This summer, one of the books that has interested me and I really enjoyed reading it is She Looks Just Like You, which is a memoir of non-biological lesbian motherhood by Miller. And this is a new book. This is her first book, and I recommend it.
Now tell me her name again.
Amy Miller.
Amy okay. Miller.
Mm-hmm. And A-M-I-E Miller.
The book is called She Looks Just Like You.
Yeah, yeah. And it's her first, but it's not, I don't mean but, and it's a good read.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that.
Sure.
There have been a number of first books that have been terrifically successful. Catherine Stockett's book, The Help, which you gave mm-hmm. Cassie gave a very, very high rating to, is still on a bestseller list that I was going through this morning.
Mm-hmm. It is. Well, and I think some of the debuts are also taking a lot of the prizes. There was a recent prize that was given. It's called the Impact Prize. I wrote about it on my blog, thelongestchapter.com, which I will shamelessly promote right now. But this award comes out every June, and it is called the Dublin City Impact Literary Award, and mm-hmm. it is Dublin, Ireland. And what's fascinating about it is the nominations come from libraries all over the world.
Wow.
Well, mm-hmm. the winner was a Dutch novelist. The book has to have been translated into English, and it's a debut novel called The Twin. Well, also, the Pulitzer this year, Tinkers, was mm-hmm. I think that was his debut, too. So mm-hmm. there was a first novelist getting a huge award. So I think the debuts are really starting to come up to the forefront, mm. and most of them tend to be literary fiction. And I think that's a great thing because the public is responding to this kind of writing.
252-8513. You can email us as well at allsides@wosu.org. And Ian is on the line. Hi, Ian. Go ahead. Ian?
Hello?
Are you with us? Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I apologize.
That's all right. Are you okay?
You caught me as I was putting a cake in the fridge.
Buried under a pile of books or something.
Yeah, no, not quite. No, actually, the reason I was calling in was a couple weeks back, NPR had run a story about Agatha Christie. And in part, one second, please.
Is he there?
Yes. A cake. It had you guys had run a story about Agatha Christie, in particular, how analyzing her work showed that she had been suffering from Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. and the way they'd done it was by running all of her collected works through a computer algorithm. Now, when you mentioned Amazon.com's recommendation system, it doesn't seem to me very far-fetched to assume that at some point in the future we'll be able to have book recommendations by having all of our current reads analyzed in the same way.
Well, that's very interesting. I recall this was on Morning Edition. Mm-hmm. Kevin's shaking his head, too. And they took her early works and compared the vocabulary, basically, how sophisticated mm-hmm. the actual words were, and then in later works and how they'd become much more simple later on and attributed this to her Alzheimer's. But, of course, I don't know that that takes into account if an author changes styles or changes.
Hemingway had Alzheimer's from the very beginning.
Then.
I'm sorry. What it doesn't do is, you know, we all read people for different reasons. And whether or not you like someone for their style, you know, that's certainly one thing. But things like, you know, no computer system is going to be as accurate as, you know, a friend or a coworker or someone who knows your tastes on an emotional level. Mm-hmm. But certainly what a computer can do is determine structurally, perhaps, what might draw you to certain authors, whether it's, you know, thought density or structure or any number of technical things. But also, you know, by essentially Googling the subject matter of a book, you know, you can get recommendations that way as well.
Well, thank you, and thank you for listening to Morning Edition. We always appreciate hearing from our listeners. 292-8513, we're talking about books. with Kevin Griffith, who teaches poetry and English at Capital University in Bexley, Cassie Rose, who reviews books here at WOSU, and Bill Eichenberger. And if you have a recommendation, we'd like to hear from you as well. What do you think about that idea?
Well, I've been thinking a lot about that idea. Sorry to barge right in.
No. I have a couple.
I have a couple of books about that. First, it was a fantastic. I don't usually like to read technology books, but this goes well beyond this. I got it at the Whetstone Library in the new book section. It's called "You Are Not a Gadget" by Jaron Lanier. Jaron Lanier is a Berkeley computer scientist, the father of virtual reality, who now, of course, is saying that we ought to be very, very wary about placing our trust in things like search engines, Google. The whole book is about how we are losing our humanity to computers. We are allowing computers to treat books not as autonomous, beautiful works of art, human creation, but as just text, bits, data to be mined for bits. And there are already movements. Each cites a lot of people who are saying, once Google gets a hold of all the books, not only will forget about recommendations, what they'll do is they'll just take the best parts of all the books you've read and mix them, mash them into one book and give you that. It's sort of a nightmarish view he has. But he makes some excellent points. He talks about how he talks about this phenomenon with how cool it is that everybody's on Facebook and Twitter. And he says, everybody thinks that's great, but imagine if the government required you to put all your personal information on a website so it could be analyzed and sold to marketers, and the government forced you you could send messages, but they had to be sent via text and had to be limited to 130 characters. Everybody would fight that tooth and nail as a government intrusion on our lives, mm-hmm. but because it's Twitter or something, it's considered really cool. And I think it's called You Are Not a Gadget, probably one of the most stimulating things I've read about the future of books and about our attitude towards computers and how they're going to help us with things like recommendations. Is that really helpful, or is that stealing away a part of your humanity?
And I'm going to ask you once again to repeat the name and the title, because people always chide me for not.
It's called You Are Not a Gadget by Jaron Lanier, and he's at Berkeley. He's considered the father of virtual reality.
Yeah. It sounds really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, though, how at one point does he address the fact that will we reach a point where we realize this isn't what we want or this isn't good, and then we come back? It's sort of like, decades ago we trashed all the homes in the city and said, oh, we're going out to the burbs, that's the way to live. And now, that resurgence of coming back in and rebuilding the old homes and refurbishing them. Mm-hmm. I mean, could that work with this, where we realize the human touch has left the book industry and we want to go back?
Well, I think there is another point of view, too, though, that technology is moving so quickly that it isn't mm-hmm. ever going to really shake out. It's just going to continue to change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with great progress, but I think some great losses, too, which people keep raising the red flag on. Because to the points about the books, I think that there's a lot of complaint about, the electronic, mm-hmm. surgence of, towards and about and with books. Because you do lose that humanity mm-hmm. of what we've talked about earlier with, the booksellers, or with just the idea of sitting down with a book and the whole creation of the book with what goes into it. It's not just someone going to a printer and printing off the pages, but it's a collaboration with a designer and a printer and the author.
Well, and of course, us as readers and
yes.
how we
respond
enter into a relationship with a book.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. it is the kind of type that is selected and the kind of paper, and mm-hmm. it's all part of the experience, which is unconscious, but we do have the experience with the book on those many levels, mm-hmm. and we're losing that, and we'll lose some sort of nourishment along the way.
Can I make a book recommendation from one human being to a bunch of listeners?
Excellent.
I am very excited about a book that I read last month. It's by Stephen Benatar, an English writer, and it's called Wish Her Safe at Home. He didn't write his first book until he was 44. This is his second book. It was briefly under consideration for a Booker Prize. John Carey, an English author, has written the introduction to this republication of the book in the New York Review of Books edition. It's a beautiful paperback. And he said that he wanted to urge the book on the other judges, and they all summarily dismissed it. And he is now looking back and wishing, A, he'd pushed harder for the book, and B, wondering why they had dismissed it so much. It's the story of an English spinster. She lives a monotonous life working in an accounting firm or some kind of work like that. And she inherits a house from her aunt. She lives basically she had lived with her mother until her mother had passed on, and now she lives alone. Her only friend in the world was her roommate, and she's a very strange and charming and delightful woman who you find out fairly early on, but over the course of reading, that she's pretty much insane. And there's at one point that she says, and this really is the crux of how the whole novel works on you, is that she's the narrator. She's a very...
She's
not a reliable. She's an unreliable narrator, and she says, "But you'll believe me. You always do." And it's such a wonderful comment on how we read books most of the time. Mm-hmm. If the narrator is telling it to us, we believe it. But what you find in this book is that her perceptions of any given event, they may be accurate, but they may be completely skewed. And they probably are. And so – and she has encounters, and you wonder if the gardener who is working on her new garden at her new house is plotting to steal her modest fortune away and leave her destitute. You wonder if the chemist at the pharmacy is going to use her badly, or and it, you go on, but it's this internally though that her she loves show tunes and old movies and she's just an absolutely wonderful companion for the entire book, as long as you don't care to have solid ground underneath your feet as you're reading along. And I just found it absolutely captivating. John Kerry said that there are folks that he would urge this book on and highly recommend, and then there are other friends he wouldn't want them to read it. So it just depends on your inclination. But she's one of the – I think she becomes one of the handful of great female characters in the books that I've read in the last 20 years. And it's called Wish Her Safe at Home, and it's by Stephen Benatar.
Is this the author who, and maybe you just said it earlier, that was hand-selling his book in the bookstores in England? He didn't have the popularity, I think it was, and so he just decided he would walk into bookstores and say to people, have you read my book? And hand them the book. I'm pretty sure it was this author. There was an article in The Guardian, I think, about him.
He's quirky himself, so that sounds very much like something he would have done. I didn't read that he did that.
Well, what happened then is, I see this is the New York Review of Books. Well, one of the people who walked in the store happened to be an editor at the New York Review of Books, and that's how it just was. He got lucky and got noticed.
Well, it's a fascinating premise, and we'll be back to talk about that and other fascinating books in just a moment.
Over 20 years after a car accident left psychologist Dan Gottlieb with quadriplegia, his young grandson Sam was diagnosed with autism. Gottlieb started writing down his thoughts about what it's like to be different in a series of letters to his grandson. They were published in a popular book. He's just published a follow-up. Dan Gottlieb on the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air is coming up today at noon here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for tuning in today. You're listening to All Sides Weekend here on WOSU. It's a pretty nice day out. It's about 80 degrees right now in Columbus, and we are looking at a high around 85 degrees today. Clear skies with a low of 65 tonight. Sunshine with a high of 92 tomorrow. And Sunday, some sunshine and scattered showers and thunderstorms. Another high right around 91.
Support for WOSU comes from the estate of Donald R. Glancy, whose life was enriched by public radio and television, and whose bequest seeks to encourage others to discover WOSU public media.
Be sure to watch Columbus on the Record tonight on WOSU-TV. Each week, WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson talks with political analysts and news reporters about the top stories of the week. Tune in for Columbus on the Record tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV.
This is All Sides Weekend. I'm Marilyn Smith. We're talking about books today with WOSU book reviewer Cassie Rose, Columbus book reviewer Bill Eichenberger, and poet and professor of English at Capital University, Kevin Griffith. Thank you all for joining us. It's always a fascinating show when we have you on. We've been talking about a variety of very, very interesting sounding books, and we're going to turn to Tracy and hear about her book recommendation. Hi.
Hi, Marilyn. It's funny, as I was listening to the comments about You Are Not a Gadget, it made me think of a book that I recently read called Virtual Death, which is about, it's a science fiction thriller that is really about what happens when society has access to live any life they want through virtual reality. And it just made me think about that because it does bring up the topic of what happens when we can have everything that we think we want. Is it something that we really want?
So be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, right.
And who wrote that book?
It's a first-time author. His name is Morgan. Last name is Bramlett.
Okay. So this is a science fiction thriller.
It's a science fiction thriller. It's a great summer read, but it definitely goes a little deeper. It makes you think about, you know, what is it that you really want?
Well, it's so interesting because technology has spawned this whole genre kind of these virtually based and ethics kind of books. And again, we have a first-time author who's apparently impressing people. I was just saying to our guests while we were on break there that it would be a great to get a compilation, I don't know how we could do this, to post on our website a list of all the books that not only we talk about here but that our listeners call in with, because I'm sure that it generates a lot of interest among other listeners who just tune in to get book recommendations. Because ironically enough, this is one place where you can do that. You don't necessarily have to go to the library or to Amazon. You can just listen to our book reviewers right here. 2928513. Thank you very much, Tracy, for giving us a call today. And Nancy's joining us. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I'm just calling because of the discussion about independent bookstores and whoever said you look hard enough, you can find them. Well, there is one in Clintonville called Area Pagitica, and it's named for an essay by Milton that discusses is opposed to censorship. And that's why Doug and Rebecca Rutledge, who own the store, named the store that.
And is this on Oakland Park?
It's just north of Oakland Park, between Oakland Park and Dunedin, yes, on the east side of High.
And this specializes in used books or new books?
Used. It's a used bookstore, used and rare.
You know, I think that Bill Cohen, who reports at our State House News Bureau,
yeah,
actually did an open house kind of kickoff to the opening of this bookstore.
Yes, he has played there. And
that's right. They do folk music, too, on, was it Tuesday nights or?
Saturday night. Mm-hmm. There's music. What I was saying was it's becoming a community center.
Mm-hmm.
And in what I consider to be the whole spirit of the thing, it's very casual but very well organized. It's very pleasant. They have a biblio dog who is there pretty much every day. And it's just the idea. They have the poets. There are two poets groups that meet there. And so, but beyond that, the selection of books is incredible. And also, if you are looking for something, you get that personal service. Of they'll hunt for it for you. They'll look. They'll put you on a list if it comes in, and so forth.
Columbus has several used rare bookstores that are very, very good. There's the Little Bookshop in Westerville, which has an extraordinary collection of modern firsts. There is also
Foul Play in Westerville.
Yes.
It's Mystery Bookshop.
Yes. And there's Acorn Bookshop in Grandview.
And Karen Wycliffe's.
Karen Wycliffe.
Yeah,
that's excellent.
Okay. And of course, Karen Wycliffe is right across the street.
Right, you can you can do a little.
And they do the back and forth thing. Have you checked, Karen's? Have you checked?
Now, is this a place where people can bring in their used books, or are they going out to seek books that they want to stock?
The answer to that question is yes. they both go out and seek, but people bring books in all the time, and they will, if time permits, they will do their. Look through and give you an offer right on the spot.
I think it's a good idea also to keep in mind that, you know, used books don't mean, you know, old tattered books from the back of a closet. I mean, if you're looking for a book that maybe was just published last year or maybe even 6 months ago, there is likely to be a used copy in one of these bookstores, and you can get it for $10.
Yes, I have a favorite mystery writer, and they will alert me when her books come in, and to see if I'd have them or not, which is really good. By the way, that's Elizabeth Peters and the Egyptology series, which is so wonderfully written. As I said, I've learned more about Egyptology reading those books than in any other thing, because it's there and it's fun. But anyway, that I just wanted to... talk a little bit about the availability of used and rare bookstores that are around. And you're very right about this particular bookstore not just having the old dust-covered volumes, but the newer ones, too.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you calling in today, 292-8513. And we often find when we do this show that our listeners really provide a wealth of knowledge and community-based information. We'd like to hear from you as well. If you have any book recommendations and you'd like to join in the conversation, feel free to do so. 292-8513, and Miriam is with us. Hi.
Good morning. This book came to mind as I listened to, I think it was Tom Ashbrook and on.
I think you're Jerry, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
You got it. No problem.
Only the obvious ones.
they were talking about suicide. I don't know if you folks, I'm sure you are, aware that the suicide rate among American military is 25% higher in the Iraq and Afghanistan war than any other wars the country's ever been in. So the book that I am recommending is Sassoon's Long Journey. Mm-hmm. I'm sure your poet is familiar with Siegfried Sassoon, edited by Paul Fussell, who, by the way, was one of the most highly decorated military men. And Sassoon was a captain, wounded three times, and he wrote a letter to the biggest newspaper in London telling this war, I'm talking about World War One now, is stupid. In essence, I'm not quoting it directly, but he says the generals are only carrying on for their own aggrandizement. Well, he thought he'd be cashiered, but they thought, well, yeah, anybody with such specific thoughts ought to go up to Craig Lockbourne, that's a mental institute, which he did, and there he met Wilfred Owen, who was another World War One poet and who was killed. But Siegfried Sassoon, by the way, I think he had a Jewish father and a Spanish mother, but he was born in England in 1886. I'm just going to read an eight-liner, Suicide in the Trenches, and it came to me because of all the increase in suicides by our boys overseas. I knew a simple soldier boy who grinned at life in empty joy, slept soundly through the lonesome dark, and whistled early with the lark. In winter trenches, cowed and glum, with crumps and lice and lack of rum, he put a bullet through his brain. No one spoke of him again. Kevin, I forget your last name. Are you familiar with
Kevin Griffith?
Griffith.
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar with Sassoon and Wilfred Owen, obviously. And as long as we're on the same topic, it's really interesting. Marilyn talked at the beginning of the show about books you can share with your children, and I just had my son read Dalton Trumbo's Johnny Got His Gun, which is another great anti-war novel. I think people should read that as well.
292-8513, and we're talking about books here on All Sides Weekend.
Is Robert Graves considered to—he's a World War One poet,
Robert Graves.
Uh-huh. He wrote Goodbye to All That. That's what he's most famous for. Uh-huh. But he would be also categorized as a World War One poet. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're going to go to Miriam now. Thank you for your call.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I think you have interviewed this author that I'm recommending on Open Line, Rebecca Skloot, S-K-L-O-O-T. She wrote a book, I think it's her first, called The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks.
I think that Ann Fisher devoted an entire hour to that particular
book. Right. It is her first book.
Well, maybe this is redundant, but it's a wonderful book. It reads like a novel, but it is a documentary that she's worked for 10 years, and the first time anything's been done to document the family that of Henrietta Lacks, whose cells became the HeLa cells that have promoted a multi-billion-dollar industry in cells. Every laboratory in the world has these cells in there that they use for testing. And people know about HeLa cells, but they don't know that it's from Henrietta Lacks, a poor African-American woman in Baltimore who died in the 50s, and her cells were used. The family's impoverished. They can't even afford medical care. And yet her cells have produced all these things that have, the polio vaccine is one of the breakthroughs from this. And most of the stem cell research is done on these cells. And I think it's a book that people ought to know about.
Thank you very much, Miriam. It is a fascinating book, and I think the Dispatch actually wrote a long story about this book when it first came out, and it's an extraordinary story, and we all have much to learn from it.
She got quite a bit of press for it, Rebecca Skloot did, and it had several weeks on the bestseller list, too.
And I think you reviewed it as well mm-hmm. for our air.
I did not. Oh, I talked. That's all right. No, I talked with Christopher about it,
that's
and
what
that's what we talked about on air, and I lent him my version, my copy of the book. Mm-hmm.
292-8513, we have just a few minutes. I'm going to ask all of our listeners now to be brief. And Pat's joining us. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I am going to ask about what you might recommend for book clubs. I've been in a book club for about 15 years, and I know a number of your listeners have. And we, we're reading Someone Knows My Name for this book club, which, of course, is based on history. And rather than, you know, things like murder mysteries or detective stories or what have you, anything to do with history, personal relationships, something that would stir up some discussion among our members. And we have even read many classics. I think it's wrong for people to always think you have to read a bestseller, because we reread The Great Gatsby and Emma and several classics. But anyhow, if you had any recommendations that would initiate some discussion, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
One that came quickly to my mind that Cassie recommended a long time ago, and I actually used in my first-year composition class at Capital, was The Unit. The author's name escapes me. Do you remember that? Yeah.
Author's name is, it'll come to me in a minute. But that would be a very good book for mm-hmm. a book club and for discussion.
Yeah, I had great discussion with my students. And they, of course, don't want to discuss books at being a book club. So they got really into The Unit.
It's Nini Holmquist.
Yeah, Nini
Holmquist. H-O-L-M-Q-V-I-S-T. It's
Swedish. I read that.
So did you read it with your book club or by?
No, I read that myself. It was a rather eerie mm-hmm. book, I thought. Someone on your group recommended it, and mm-hmm. I did read that, and it was a little disturbing, but it was I never thought of that for book club. That's a good suggestion. Thank you.
What about also the Hans Falada book? Yeah. No Man Dies Alone. It is fiction, but it is based on a real event.
That sounds good.
It's set in Nazi Germany, and it's a couple whose child dies during the war, and they become anti-Nazis and leave flyers all over Berlin against the regime.
Okay. That sounds good.
There's great historical information about the author, which you could read online, which would also provoke discussion in the book group.
Thank you.
292-8513. And I notice that with a number of books now that I read that there are book group
They all
discussion
have, yeah.
questions in the back of it. Does that kind of co-opt the process, or is it really helpful?
I've wondered that myself. I don't know, because I see the questions and I think, well, does it turn it into a classroom situation as opposed to...
Or just the questions they want you to discuss as opposed to the ones that come up, you know, in your mind.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
292-8513, and Stephen is joining us. Hi, Stephen. You there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to get the panel's take on Bret Easton Ellis as an author.
Well, imagine that. I'm sitting with both of his books here. Do you mind if I just jump right in?
Did you plant this call?
I just started with Lunar Park, uh-huh. And I just wanted to know where that fit in his repertoire and what you think of him as an author.
Well, I'll tell you, I have mixed feelings about him as an author. I reviewed his most recent book, Imperial Bedrooms, for The Plain Dealer, and... It's on the 25th anniversary of Less Than Zero, his breakthrough book. This is a sequel, and it picks up 25 years later. And so I went back and read Less Than Zero, and I thought it was an absolutely brilliant book. I don't know how you can get characters to think less, say less, feel less than he does in Less Than Zero. It's really powerful because these lives are completely unexamined, and they're just going through sort of dark L.A. after night on drugs and alcohol sexual mishaps and everything else.
Did you have a hard time relating to them, though?
Not so much, because it makes sense that
youngsters...
Oh,
yes, you're a man. No. It's a loaded question.
All right, Marilyn. No, but they're young, and so they're not thoughtful. They're just sort of living the life of privilege that their parents have bestowed on them. But anyhow, this new novel is set in the now, and it's basically just a very mundane noir novel about a brutal murder, and he's really basically just trying to and of course he did American Psycho, and I think ever since his whole career has been based on trying to out-top himself or outgross himself or do something extreme, and it just becomes very tedious, I think. It's interesting. There are interesting moments of it. The opening chapter is the main character watching the movie that was made of Less Than Zero, which is kind of funny, you know, and it's kind of inside, and he's talking about Amy or Gertz, or what's her name, and then and Andrew McCarthy and all these folks, and as if he, and saying that, oh, the book was completely autobiographical and so on and so forth, and reviewing the book, reviewing the movie, and that kind of thing. And it's interesting, but when it turns into just a murder mystery, it becomes very dull and predictable.
Yeah, there's quite an element of self-reference in a lot of his novels.
Absolutely. And if you go to his website, it's all about Bret Easton Ellis. And at one point he was on a book tour where he kept missing missing events, and then he'd write about missing the event and how hungover he was or something.
Well, that's what I just found. It was very self-absorbed and very self-serving. And I think it was American Psycho that I started to read and couldn't finish it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, I was not able to go into that book. I had to put it down.
Well, we have just about a minute and a half left to go, and I'm going to ask each one of you to recommend. Now, we have talked in depth about books during the show, but if there's something that you'd like to recommend to our readers here at the end.
I'll start with Spies of the Balkans by Alan First. It was just out, just been out for about a week. He is an expert espionage novelist. He's top of the field, always writes about World War II, puts you right into the atmosphere. And this is 1940s Greece, and I won't go into too much detail, but if you're looking for a really involving, good espionage novel, this is it, Spies of the Balkans.
Real quickly, I don't normally like memoir, but I found an incredible memoir just on the new bookshelf. It's called Invisible by Hugh D. Montalembert. He is a French artist, and it's an interesting memoir because a few years ago, robbers broke into his apartment and threw thinner into his eyes, and he became blind.
And Bill?
A Fine Place to Dream by Bill Barrich. It's subtitled Racehorses, Romance, and the Irish.
And there you have it for this month. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820 NPR News.